Hey, this is Not Your Big Brother's podcast, and we're back with another episode on the first one.
It's the first episode.
Okay, we can go around and introduce ourselves so you know our voices, since this is the first time of three times. I'm Sophia. It's my voice.
My name is
I'm Oxalai.
Okay, well, anyway, I'm Nico. Hi.
And I'm Elliot.
Okay, so we're going to do a little history, since not everyone knows about the book 1984, which is what our podcast is all about. It was written by George Orwell, and this book was published in 1949. This is one of his most famous books, along with Animal Farm, which is read a lot in high school and middle school as well. But he has written a bunch of smaller books, both fiction and nonfiction. 1984 was published only a year before his death. In 1950, he died at the age of 46, very tragic. And one of his other working titles for this novel was The Last Man in Europe.
Okay, so let's just dive into a quick summary. The novel is set in the year 1984, that's a given by the name, in a totalitarian state called Oceania, which is formerly known as England. And our story is specifically set in London, or as they call it, Airstrip One. So Oceania is governed by this group called the Party, the Inner Party specifically, and they use mass surveillance and censorship to maintain control of Outer Party citizens, suppressing individualized thoughts and enforcing the party's ideology, which is ENGSOC, or English Socialism. And our protagonist is a man by the name of Winston Smith, and he's a member of the Outer Party who is, as we find out, against the party itself. So why don't we go into our first impressions of the book and our reading so far?
Okay.
Well, I said the same thing with The Handmaid's Tale. Oceania sucks.
For me, it was just very confusing. I didn't really know where everything was. It took me a minute to like get used to the text, I guess.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Especially when we like read only like 7 pages and there was just a lot of like exposition. But I think now that we're like about halfway-ish through the book, I think like now we are understanding more. But it's weird because this book was written like, what is it? I can't think of your like 70, 80 years ago, but it does have a lot of realistic ideas about like even like our own government, which is kind of crazy. So that's like, that was one of my first impressions. Yeah. Like, it's very modern for a book almost 80 years old.
Yeah, it's still relevant today, which is kind of unsettling to think about. I had the same reaction. Whenever I'm reading dystopian novels, I always just like the first thing I think of is how did the people in power come into power and how they've been in power for so long. But like you said, Sophia, as we've like read on, it's become a little bit more clear everything and how the society works.
Yeah, I think that was one of my first reactions too. It's like, it's very clear how there's no privacy and they pretty much control every part of your life. So I think that a big part of why it took so long to understand what was happening too is because the people in power try to make it so that the people working like don't know what's going on. They're just like machines just thinking about the next thing. So I think it's interesting how as Winston discovers more, we're discovering more with him.
That's our first impressions. Well, obviously we're going to be learning more as we read and we'll go into into different topics. But I think now we can get into the bulk of the podcast and our main themes and talking points. And this week's theme is literal and figurative. So we'll be talking about both the literal in the book and the figurative from the section that we read.
I guess our first idea is talking about Big Brother and the party. So Big Brother, for me, my first impression about Big Brother was like, he's like the ruler of like Oceania. And he's the leader of like the party, I guess, the one that brought everyone together. And Big Brother is basically like the image of the party that's like that's supposed to represent like fair and the people and like loyalty. Mm-hmm. And when I started reading the book, on literally on the first page of the book, you see Big Brother's watching you.
Yeah, there's this, I think it's a poster and they're like all over. And they have this big, you know, the head of the party, the face of the party. And then the words, Big Brother is watching you. And I think for us, like reading that, it would be unsettling and kind of scary to see that. But for the people of this society, that's like a normal thing. They wouldn't even think twice about it. And they would probably, I don't know, they seem to worship the party and worship Big Brother himself. So they probably have a different reaction to seeing that. And they're probably used to seeing it after so long.
Yeah, and it's interesting because they do have all these posters all over the place. And like one of the main things, and also there's like the telescreens, which basically like these TV screens that are like everywhere or in most places where Big Brother and the party can watch you. But it's right, like big
show up on coins too.
Yes. Yeah. And they're afraid of what hidden mics throughout the place. So if there isn't a telescreen, maybe there's a mic somewhere. So as the slogan indicates, they're always watching or at least listening to you.
Yeah, and there's even like thought police, double thinking.
Right.
Yeah.
And the thought police are like, this society, I feel like, is more about mental control than like control of physical bodies. They control a lot of like the thinking and the ideology of the citizens in Oceania. And it seems like that matters more than, you know, their actions. It's more about like their thoughts and their thinking, which is a little bit different from The Handmaid's Tale, but. Yeah.
What did you guys think of the slogan? War equals peace. War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength.
At first I did not get it because that is, it's kind of like the textbook definition of contradictory.
Mm-hmm.
There's obviously a reason to it though. It's like confuse people or something.
Yeah, it seems like no one in their right mind could read that and just thinks it make any sense. But I think that because they've just been reading it their whole lives, most likely, they just accept it as what it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the double think. I'm not clear on if it's a part of Newspeak, which is their like new language or dialect. But it basically means like you accept a fact as the truth, even if it contradicts, you know, a part of the fact. So like them, you know, war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength. To us, obviously those things are not equal. But to them, like they've adopted doublethink into their everyday thinking. So reading that sentence, reading those statements and that slogan, they accept that war is peace and freedom is slavery and ignorance is strength.
So it's like a
green. That's back to them. With it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's kind of there to make them not second guess the fact that they're constantly in war, which isn't a normal thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was also thinking about like that kind of contradictory, but also with the ministries and like where like people work, and the main character Winston works in the Ministry of Truth, and we'll get into this later, but what he does basically is like rewrites the truth into false, but he works in the Ministry of Truth. And then there's like the Ministry of Love that works with law and order and is like the scariest place. And the Ministry of Peace is with war, which goes to the war is peace. So it's like all like, you wouldn't expect these things to be together, but that's what, you know, the idea of like double speak and double think is.
Okay. Yeah. And I guess if we want to go into Winston's job in the Ministry of Truth, his job is to basically take the past and, well, yeah, a form of lying. He takes the past and then he turns it into, you know, he changes the official documents to match what's happened in the present. In chapter 4 in book 1, he actually took a speech from Big Brother about the war. Big Brother made a prediction about what would happen with one of the events of the war. And then Winston had to change the actual outcome to match what happened. Because if Big Brother has, you know, made a false prediction, the people might stop believing in him, they might stop trusting him, which could be catastrophic for the party and the government. So there's this quote from page 35, 36, "Who controls the past ran the party slogan, controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past." So it's basically alluding to the fact that Big Brother and everyone that works in the ministries and in the outer party help them to control the past and make it match the present and the future.
Indeed.
Yes, and it's kind of almost scary. We're like, they're just controlling this. Like, no one knows. Like, there's a thought, because there's the whole thing about the chocolate, and like, you're supposed to get, like, they're lowering the rations of chocolate that they're able to get. But like, Winston would have to rewrite that to say that they were never supposed to get that amount of chocolate, but instead that's higher than what they were supposed to get. But in step fact, it was lower. And people in their mind could remember and be like, hey, this is less chocolate. But because like, it's written out and it's on this piece of newspaper or however, on the TV screen, they're gonna be like, oh no, I believe in Big Brother. This is better than how it was, when it really isn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this
and
is
if they were to ever. Oh, you go, Elliot.
I was just gonna say, this is one of the things that confused me too, because it seems like they should lose trust in Big Brother if they're just being lied to and they remember in their memory like what actually happened.
I think the whole point of this is to make them lose trust in their memory. Yeah. So. Yeah, there's a quote. It was like, control, I think it's the slogan for the Ministry of Truth. Let's see. Whoever controls the past controls the future. Whoever controls the present controls the past. Something like that.
Yeah. And like I said earlier, it's all about like controlling thought and thinking. So if they can control memory too, that helps them have like a stronger hold on people.
Well, I guess I think the next big idea would be new speak versus old speak. Cause that's kind of like the new language versus the old language.
Yeah. All right. So basically, see, the best way I can describe it is that this new speak is basically a simplified version. I'd say a demified version of what we refer to as old speak, which I'm pretty sure is English. Basically what we're trying to do is like, you're trying to shave down hundreds of words from the dictionary every single edition so that people can express less and less, so that there will be less thought for people. They don't have to think about things. Yes.
The way newspeak is kind of like, I wouldn't say scary, but it's kind of disturbing about how like, you can't just have like other words that like mean vague or like not exactly what it is. So instead of having good and bad, you have good and ungood, or you have double good or plus good. But it's like, it's just, I guess like in our world, that's so weird to think people be like, how's your day? Be like, plus good, I'm having a plus good day. It's just so bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm wondering, will people like ever come to invent new words themselves and kind of like slang terms, or like expecting that this brotherhood will continue on in the party? That's what I'm saying.
And then it's like what made me come up with an idea of plus good? Like, how do you have a plus good day?
It's a good question. What makes a day a plus good day versus a good day versus a double plus good day?
The point is to make one word stronger than the other, I guess.
And also to add to this, they're like basically eradicating the language itself. Like they're constantly updating the dictionary and, like, I don't know, like, making the vocabulary for everyone smaller and smaller, which plays into the whole thought control and expression control. Because if you only have so many words to use, then everyone's using the same ones and there's no variation between the language.
Yeah, you're just giving it more meaning, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point.
I want to bring up this very quick point. We don't really have to discuss it, but it's kind of more of like the figurative. So this is in my book, which is a little different. Around page 95 and 96, Winston goes back to, I think it's like the perils or the of the people in like this other part of town. He goes back to where he bought his journal, where he is writing down his thoughts, which is illegal, and he could be reported to the thought police. But he buys this basically useless paperweight that's like coral, but it has a very significant meaning to him because it's from the time before. And Winston really wants to know, like, remember what was like life before, how do they work? Like, is there ever a way we can get back to that? So it's just a little useless orb, a paperweight that holds so much meaning to him because it's from a different time.
As one. Yeah, I mean, we can talk about that just a little bit. In the beginning of the book, he was having these memories of his mother. He was trying to, like, recall things from his childhood. We learn really early on that he's been living in this society since he was a kid. So there are times when he can't remember anything else, but it seems like he has some motivation to remember the past. Which can be a very dangerous thing considering his job is literally changing the past and making sure that the past doesn't exist the way it happened. I'm interested to see that come back up because we sort of didn't see that after the first couple chapters.
Yeah, so it's definitely going to be something interesting to look forward to.
Well, then I guess one little point about Julia is she was originally introduced as like a coworker who was following him, and he thought that he was getting spied on, but then eventually she confesses her love to him. But then in one of their conversations, he says, in this game that we're playing, we can't win. This was around page 120 for me. And I think this is a metaphor comparing their actions against the government as a game. And it's almost like they're just pawns being played by Big Brother to basically accomplish their goals. And I think that it explains their two different perspectives. Like, Winston doesn't think that he could win. He thinks that he's just going to die eventually. But she kind of lives it as she can make the most of life, and when she gets caught, she gets caught.
Mm. Yeah, Julia's an interesting character.
Interesting is a good way to put it.
Yeah, very descriptive word. I mean, she differs from Winston so much. They both sort of have the idea that they don't trust in the party, but she's so much younger than him, and she just has a different energy about the party because she basically masks herself and participates in things like the Junior Anti-Sex League and things like that, but then when she's in hiding, you know, she's the complete opposite. And I guess Winston is too, because he still works in the ministry, but I don't know, they have different energies about like their disdain towards the party.
Yeah, and I would say the biggest difference just comes from the fact that Winston still has a lot of memories of life before, and she just kind of, that's all she knows.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be interesting to see how Winston changes, whether or not he hangs out with him more.
Yeah, I wonder what's going to happen in the next chapter.
Well, there's a lot that could happen. I feel like there's a lot of ways that this could go. It could go great, it could go awful.
Yeah.
I guess we only know one way, and that's going to be to read. Thanks for listening to Not Your Big Brother's podcast. We'll be back next week for another episode. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll stop recording.